Welcome to Third Tuesday Conversation, a monthly podcast that focuses on the ministry of faith formation with children, youth, and families in ELCA congregations. Our goal is to engage in conversations that strengthen and empower your ministry world. This podcast is produced by the ELCA Youth Ministry Network. I'm Elizabeth Pedersen.
I'm Danica Olson.
And I'm Adam Butler. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night, all you lovely people. Welcome back to Third Tuesday Conversation. We are so grateful that you have taken the time to find our episode and give it a listen. And we come to you now in October. For those of you who have lost track, it's October. And I had to look at a calendar today to make sure that I was on the right month. Elizabeth, Danica, what's up? Hey, how are you?
Oh, banter.
Still kicking.
Yeah.
Just, you're surprised by banter. We just have gotten straight to business too many times lately that I want to know how you're doing.
I was at a network meeting outdoors in a park this morning with, not a youth ministry network meeting. We have a youth ministry network, but a local one. You know,
this is very confusing.
I'm sorry. Not the ELC.
Are you sure you're in the right place?
I don't know anymore.
It is a youth ministry network meeting.
Yeah.
Not a the youth ministry network.
I'm not sure how to describe it anymore. But we met in a park. People met in a park, and it was the first time that we gathered as a local youth ministry network since who knows when. So it was nice.
That is nice. Sounds nice. Sounds idyllic. Except for maybe was it youth ministry network? Was it just
a bunch of
random people with chairs in a parking lot and outside?
Case could be made for both.
Who knows? Who knows these days?
Perfect. It's October and it's the best month of the year because Halloween.
It includes Halloween. Danica's very favorite thing in the whole world.
Really?
I know. We've had this discussion before on this podcast.
We have.
Here we are again. Danica saying it's her favorite.
But I love Halloween.
Danica saying it's her favorite, and me going, "What are you talking about?"
Thanks for listening to me, Adam.
What are you gonna be for Halloween, little girl?
I'm not gonna tell you.
I'm just turning the tables on your lack of enthusiasm around my love of Disney.
True. I do not have a love of Disney.
So are you going to be Minnie Mouse?
Nope.
No.
Not even close.
All right. You do have a costume picked out?
Duh. It's October.
Are you the type of person who can dress up all by yourself, or do you have to have your whole family as a costume?
No, it's a straight up theme all the time. Everybody has to fit into the theme, and I'm going to not know what to do with myself. When my children are old enough and want to choose their own costumes, because time's a ticking on that one with our 5-year-old. I think I convinced her this year that maybe, just maybe, she could do what I would like her to do for Halloween, but pretty sure next year, no dice.
Is it a secret what the costume is?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's what I figured.
But it did present a few challenges because it has to have a mask.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
And I mean, of all the things, Halloween has masks, so it's not super hard, but to get a themed costume with family masks was a bit of a challenge, but we got it. We're good.
Incredibles. I got it.
Nope. Oh. Sorry.
Just kidding. No, I know. Their faces aren't covered. It's only their eyes, so.
Right. So
your eyes are protected. Well, no, not your eyeballs, just your eyelids. Gosh. Your eyelids are protected from COVID.
We have sorely digressed.
I know.
We have. You're right.
Anyway,
it's been fun. This is fun. I missed banter. I did. Well, anyway. Everyone, as we were preparing for this podcast, we had quite a bit of conversation about what the topic for this podcast or future podcasts would be. We had a growing list as we conversed, and I think every time we got to one topic, we were like, yeah, that'd be good. And then it's like, is that right? And so Elizabeth, read off the list of the things that we had made a list of to as ideas.
We could talk about the wall. We could talk about grief, the pandemic, racial justice. How about the election? And maybe church work.
And like we laugh about that list because I mean, every single one of those could be like an entire year of podcasts. Every single one of them could be deep or silly, or I mean, it is the wide range, and so much of it was so hard to grasp. Like where do you go with that? And that has given that finally gave rise to a question among the three of us as we kind of let that all sit, was this question around where do we go from here? As we thought back to all the topics that we thought could be interesting to talk about and things that would be helpful for us to talk about as a youth ministry network, the question is ingrained in each one of those topics. Where do we go from here? When we're talking about grief, one of the primary questions for someone who is grieving, who has experienced some sort of loss, is now, where do I go from here? What now? Where do I go now? As we're thinking ahead to an election, and no matter what side of the aisle you're on, you will get to the other side of November 3rd, and you will now ask yourself, where do we go from here? We talked about racial justice and the question that continues to be asked. We say all the time, it's ridiculous that the question is still being asked, and yet here we are still asking ourselves as a country, as a world, where do we go from here? Where do we go from here as people? And so we thought that maybe it would be a good idea to dive into that question a little bit, that maybe you all are sitting out there wondering in all of those areas, or maybe just in your church work, where do I go from here? Where do we go from here? And I know that personally, I have just been stuck in that question. And I don't think that there's like a way out of it necessarily right now or ever. Or do we ever stop asking ourselves that question? But it seems like right now in this moment, that is just such a like visceral, profound question in every part of my life. So that's where we are. I don't know how much more else to say about it as an intro, but Danica and Elizabeth, we talked quite a bit about this. Where are you guys at in terms of that question and all the things that it applies to?
I think what you just said about the question, where do we go from here? It's not something that I have always been at the forefront of my mind all the time in my life, you know, like just looking back over the last few years. I wouldn't say where do we go from here is something that I'm always thinking about, you know, because you get into a rhythm of life, you get into a rhythm of ministry, and it's not unless something big happens that you start asking, okay, well, where do we go from here? But it is so true that in almost every area of my life right now, that is the question. Like, where do we go from here? We're waiting to see what's going to happen next with lots of things. And once we see what happens next, then we have to figure out where we go. Mm-hmm. And it's this like it seems like a never ending wait and see and then decide and wait and see and then decide. And oh boy, is that exhausting. Mm-hmm. I'm exhausted.
Yeah. I think the other piece is that as we're having this conversation and thinking like, oh, we already talked about that. We already talked about that. We already mm-hmm. talked about that, right? Like this right. is the,
what else do we talk about?
The space we've lived in all of 2020. And so we started to brainstorm people who we know in our lives and in our network who have been grappling with this question over various topics this year or over the past few years. And so while we couldn't land on one guest or one topic to tackle, we decided that we were going to use this question, where do we go from here, as a three-part series. And so where do we go from here? Part one is today. And we have with us a friend of the network, Kristen Baltram. Kristen is a dear friend and a longtime person in youth ministry. And recently, She and I have been having some interesting conversations around this very question. Kristen's been asking, where do I go from here? So I'm going to let her tell a little bit about her vocational transition. But for today's episode, we're going to sit in the question with Kristen, where do I go from here? And our hope for this series is that you might hear something that resonates with you, and you might hear something that is a question that's been nagging for you, and you might hear that you aren't alone in this question. So without further ado, Kristen Baltram is here, and I would love if you'd introduce yourself. Most people probably know you or have heard your laugh somewhere along the line at an extravaganza.
If you've been to an extravaganza.
Extravaganza legend. Oh, the Lord.
Laughter coming from the back row.
Exactly.
Hi, Kristen.
Thank you. Hello. Hello. It is good to be with you all. I'm honored to be among this, you friends, you other longtime people. I like that you called me a longtime person.
A long time person.
So, long like, time I have person. Been a person for a long time.
Oh, man.
What's like my whole life.
That's my first question, Kristen. What's it like being a person for such a long time?
Oh my gosh, it's amazing the amount of experience that I've had over my long time.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't know anything different other than being a person for a long time. So,
that's good.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yes.
So tell us about who you are and about this question you've been grappling with.
Well, yes, I have been a longtime person, but also a longtime person in youth ministry. I recently closed out 27 years of the gift and the honor and the joy of doing youth ministry in 5 different congregations. So yeah, it was an end. And so just to frame the story a little bit, like, how did I get to that place of knowing that it was time? My last congregation, my pastor was fantastic. Like, we had just this magical working relationship, and he was a good boss and friend and comrade in ministry, and it was great. So when he announced his retirement, I was like, what? Like, okay, I get it. You're an old guy. It's time for you to go, but, you know, move along.
You
but
have
at the
been
same
a person
point,
for
I was
a very
like,
long too.
He was, yeah, for much longer than I. But it was like, okay, so what does this mean for me, right? Isn't that the great Lutheran question? What does this mean for us? You know, so I started really thinking about that and was like, there's going to be another pastor that comes in, and I don't get to have a whole lot of say about who that person is. And that means that this congregation is getting ready for its next era of whatever this congregation is called to. And I just got really honest with myself and realized that I did not have a whole nother era in me, having done this ministry for so long. So I just was like living in that during his whole retirement, and then during the whole congregational transition with our interim and all of that. And at the same time, I was paying very, and this is what we learn, right? Is you're supposed to pay attention to the context of your, you know, your ministry site, and the context of Bethlehem Lutheran, where I had been serving, was changing. The church across the street from us was becoming a warming shelter for the homeless ministry in town. The property immediately right next to us is being developed into low-income housing, which just changed the dynamic in the neighborhood. So if we're not paying attention to that dynamic, then we're not paying attention. So it really got clear to me that the gifts that I brought were different than the gifts that the physical context was calling us to be. And knowing now that we were going to have a new pastor, and who, by the way, is thinking awesome. She's fantastic. But it's time for the congregation to really pay attention to its next era and who they're being called to be. And I knew that I needed to get out of the way to open up the space for the congregation to decide how they move forward. Now, personally, at the same time, while that transition was happening and while we were going through all of the stuff that happens in that year and a half, my family of origin was going through some stuff where my older sister, who was a person longer than me, she has had quite a history, lots of struggles in her past, and she spiraled down during that time and ended up experiencing homelessness for 7 months. And so I was like the emotional manager for my family as we navigated what that meant for Anne, my sister, and boundaries that our family had to draw. And then eventually my sister died by suicide in July. So it was July of 19. So while the congregation is doing all of this transitioning, my family was doing all this transitioning, I was paying attention to my own awareness that my life was going to change somehow. And it was bizarre because it was like I knew that all of those things would come to an end. It was like it was a terrible time in life and it was super hard. But it was also like watching a really intense movie that you know is only an hour and 42 minutes long. So it's like the suffering is finite and it will end. It was like I had this deep knowing that it would end. And then I would have to ask the question, well, now what? And it did end. The transition ended and we have a new pastor and she's fantastic. And sadly, my sister's life did end. And now, you know, we're dealing with that grief. And what do we do from there? And then my career shifted. And actually, I had turned in my letter of resignation on March 1st, just before everything shut down on March 13th. So I was like right in line with what the pandemic did to like shut things down and turn a corner. And it sort of served, this sounds terrible, but it served as an opportunity for me to really just sit and stop and reflect on what was next. And I have to be really transparent and admit and claim the fact that I got to choose my pivot point. I do come from a place of privilege that I got to choose to leave my position and not have to worry about my safety nets or financial resources going away. My family is totally insured through my husband's job. My husband makes enough money that we're okay with me, you know, with just being a single income family now. Everybody's still employed. I have to claim that and know that because that does factor into how do I make decisions about what's moving forward. And it's sort of like, it isn't Spider-Man to like, whoever has great privilege has great responsibility, right? And so that became part of the decisions about like, well, what do I go do from here and where do I go? So that's like the whole backstory of how I got to this place of having to make some decisions.
Super helpful. Thank you for sharing that backstory. Mm-hmm. I know that you've been wrestling with this question, where do I go from here? And I know that being your friend and sitting with you in this question, it brought up a lot of stuff for you. What's next? Who am I now? Where do I go from here? And is that question wrapped up in my grief? Is that question being driven by my grief? Do I feel guilty? Do I whatever? So I'm wondering, will you just unpack a little bit of that?
What got clear as like the world shut down and I was forced to just sit in my backyard and read and super self-reflect was that I realized very clearly that my identity and my purpose and my spirituality were very tightly braided into my role as the director of faith formation, as serving as a deaconess at Bethlehem Lutheran. My role as a Christian public leader was all of those things. And so all of a sudden I didn't have that role anymore. So then I began to wonder like, well, who am I and what is my purpose? And what does it even believe anyway? Like when we work in the church, at least for me, I was always like that framework was always the filter through which I took all these like philosophical, spiritual ideas and like filtered them down through this framework and doctrine and blah, blah, blah. And then now that wasn't there anymore, I was like now what? What do I actually believe for myself that I'm not trying to teach and hold true specifically to specific doctrine? So it was sort of earth shattering. It was earth shattering, yet it was exciting, yet it was terrifying, like all at the same point. And I keep going back to this image of Like I was like a little prairie dog underneath the ground, and I knew all the little tubes and mazes and all that stuff of like being a church worker. And it's like I knew that underground world of church so well, every corner.
I could walk through the building with all the lights off.
Right. Like totally. Like I know this system so well. And it's all of a sudden I like popped up, my head's above ground. I'm like, whoa, there's like a whole world out here. And that's crazy. You know? So it's like this whole new discovery and this whole new adventure, but being very methodical in my awareness as well as I tend to be, I quickly recruited a spiritual director, a therapist, and a life coach. And I interviewed each of them to find out who I would hire to be my, what's the word, accompanist in this discovery of identity and purpose and spirituality. And after having conversations with all three of them and really looking at what it was I wanted and needed in this time, I did decide to go with this life coach person. So I'm like just now embarking on a 13-week session, and it's, I don't even know enough about it yet to get in there. But at the same time, what I've been paying attention to is that the way that my, now that I'm free from some of the responsibilities of the congregation, I get to pay attention to family in a new way, and specifically the family story around my sister. And knowing that I still have a desire to do good in the world, which is still part of like purpose and still part of identity, is that I know how to do that for the sake of the world, which is like this spirituality connecting piece of it. I've also assembled an advisory team, and we are putting together Annie and Millie's place. So my sister had a dog, and I think our whole family is convinced that the reason why she lived as long as she did in the situation she was in is because her dog gave her purpose and unconditional love and companionship and all those things that even our family had to draw boundaries around. And it was also a blocking point for her to get services because she wouldn't surrender her animal in order to stay overnight in a shelter and get the services that she needed. And she couldn't get a job because who was going to care for the dog and all that kind of stuff. So we're launching Annie and Millie's Place, which is at this point just an effort to do something. We haven't clearly defined it, to do something to bridge the gap between service providers and humans who are experiencing homelessness and their animals, and trying to pay attention to what's happening there. So it's like my purpose has turned into this like opportunity to do something good that's really about my story and less about this framework that I was working in. And I think that's been a pivotal point as we reflect on this. What are you doing? It's like, well, each of us is given a story. And what does the story say? And what is the story calling us to pay attention to and be about? And what can we do? Like, I have this great opportunity to have time on my hands and resources available to change the trauma of my sister's story for our family into a story of hope for the world. And that's a major shift because it's coming from not just like an institution, but it's coming from my own experience, which I don't know that I would have had the time to do if I was still working in a congregation.
Right.
Yeah.
So for those of us who are still in this mess, what's it like? Is it awesome?
On the other side? God, it's so great. Right. Not gonna lie. Yeah. But you know what? Here's the thing. It's like the people that I've pulled into the advisory board and the people who are supporting me in this, they're all people from my church, you know, and not just my congregation, but it's like you guys. And it's, you know, Danica's been a conversation partner this whole time. And it's this church. It's when we go from leading the church to being just one of the people in the back pew, you know, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, this is what it's like to be part of the community and not leading the community. But like all the connective pieces are still there. I just don't have to like do some of the other like leadership pieces, which is kind of cool. I mean, and isn't this what like the role of the Christian public leader is supposed to be, like training are the people in the pews to go pay attention to the vocation and pay attention to their lives and the story of their life and what does that mean for the world, and then equipping them to do something about it with a language of faith, right? So now I have to like take my own medicine and I have to listen to my own advice and I have to pay attention to what my story is telling me and I have to go do something, you know, based on that. That's what I've been trying to get the congregation to do the whole time. So now I have this.
Yeah, it's like a really, I don't know if it's the right word, but it's like super meta, right? That is like you're on the outside and you're trying to do the thing that you were teaching everyone to do for so long, right? and like what a weird thing to put into practice the things that you've wanted others to do for so long.
Yeah. Well, right.
So I am interested though about, you've touched on it kind of a little bit already, but I'm interested to hear like what has changed and what stayed the same about you, but also about how you move about the world. Cause I mean, I know that things have changed for you on a personal level, but like what has changed or what stayed the same about how you function in the world? Now that it's not just like primarily in the church setting.
Right. Right. I think what's changed, honestly, is my stress level. Like,
sure.
And again, like I was able to, and I actually did resign my position before all the COVID stuff happens. And I am holding all of the leaders of these congregations in so much prayer because I can't imagine being in the position navigating how to do church in a whole new way. That's hard stuff. The real ride, right?
It's super easy, Kristen.
It's super easy. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Life has never been easier.
Easy breezy. I'm feeling good in the neighborhood.
Well, like I said earlier, though, that
I'm doing my easy breezy dance.
I love that. So good. It's so good that it's easy for you, Adam. I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
I am. Like the reason why I was leaving the position, why I knew it was time to go, is because it was time for the congregation to do something different. And to do something different, I needed to get out of the way, right? And then COVID came and said, please do everything different. And I was like, remember, I'm leaving now. Like I already said, I'm getting out of the way. So there are people who know like much better about that. So like what has changed and what has stayed the same is what has changed is stress level and how I do things now. I'm much more in tune to my own spiritual nudges of the next right step, the next right thing for me, which sounds a little ego-centric, like, oh, I'm just going to do what's right for me, which is why not only I did keep that therapist that I interviewed, I have an agreement to keep her on standby to help. She will help keep me grounded in why I'm doing what I'm doing as something for the world and not just about me. So yeah, I guess I'm just much more in tune with myself and more in tune with my own story and being able to accept that story for what it is and kind of breathe through it. What has stayed the same, honestly, is many of the relationships, the ones that I know were very mutual relationships are still very, very mutual. And the support is still there. And you know what's interesting is I think it's both the same and different, is my awareness of God is, I think, more acute now. But like we say, God is never changing, right? But our awareness of God is. So I feel like I'm more in tune with my own spirituality now than I was before, even though that's like all we do when we work for the church is like pay attention to matters of faith. Right. Yet I lost my own faith. Didn't lose my own faith. I like lost my own awareness of my own spirituality. Cause like the last, I'm sorry, like, but let's be real. When I'm writing confirmation lessons and Bible studies and doing all these things, the last thing I want to do when I get home is read the Bible. Right. Like maybe I'm the only one, but like the last thing I want to do is like the general contractor whose house is, you know, a money pit, because they just, the last thing they want to do when they get home is keep working. Right. And so to release faith and spirituality from your job has personalized it for me in a new way. So that's like, it's the same, but different.
That's such a, what am I trying to say? I relate to that so much, because I think the things that you're saying that you've found are the things that I struggle with as a Christian public leader to find within this work. And so it's interesting to hear that perspective from outside of it, and, you know, to find hope in that, that hopefully the work that we're doing as Christian public leaders is at least inspiring that in others out in the world outside the church building. But I relate to it so much, because I think it's the hard, I think you're right in saying that it's one of the hardest things as a leader in the church to do.
It is, because it's like there's a certain level of manufactured to it when we're
right
programming it, you know, but then when we try to do it for ourselves in a way that's organic and authentic, it's different.
Mm-hmm.
So your story is inspiring. You are inspiring, Kristen, and hearing you talk about your journey is it's beautiful. And I suspect that though it sounds like you are in a great place, that getting to this place wasn't necessarily easy for you.
And no, so not at all.
I thought it was fair to say I didn't think that you're actually a superwoman. so I'm curious about if you can reflect a little bit on like those intentional steps that you needed to take, or realizations that you made along the way, or convictions that you hold that helped you to keep moving through.
Mm-hmm. Like talking about the, like knowing that I needed to interview three people to do the things.
Yeah, right. I mean, because, you know, well, we know that there's people out there listening to this even who have found themselves in a vocational transition as well, you know, and right. I'm trying to get at that wisdom that you might have to share there about
how. I don't know that that's wisdom as much as it is that I just like doing things like with people, and I'm not good at doing it by myself, and I need the good old accountability buddy, you know. And that's what we always like, you know, script the 2x2 model, right? That's all scriptural stuff. It's like we don't have to go this path alone of discovery. And I'm convinced that there's people out there who know way more than I do, especially since I like popped up into this new world of like, whoa, there's everything out here outside the church building. And there's people who know things about stuff. And it's really, I don't know that it was wisdom that called me to find a partner as much as it was scared. And I don't want to do this by myself. I need a friend.
Yeah.
No. And that's okay. I mean, we tell people that all the time. So again, it's a piece of like, you have to, everything that we've been saying to our people over the years, we need to be able to hear that for ourselves too, that it's okay to find a partner to help you on the journey. It's okay to take some time to breathe. It's okay to listen to your own story. It's okay to change directions when you know that it's time. Just hold your nose and jump in. And that's what it's like when I was working for the church for so long, it was like, this is so much of everything that I am and everything that I do and everything that I know. It was like, there can't possibly be a place for me outside. And then when I just like jumped and took the risk and did it, all of a sudden it's like, not only is there a place for me, but there's like a world of opportunity. And this is kind of fun to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's more that needs to be done. And it's kind of exciting to think about all the opportunities and all the people I have yet to meet and all the cool ways that God is going to show up through different organizations and different people and different conversations. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of exciting.
I think also, though, it's fair to say that there was a messy middle.
Oh, my gosh.
Like,
it was
right. You totally jumped in. But after you jumped, before you hit whatever you were jumping into, there was this like, what the hell did I just do?
Right.
And who am I? And where do I go from here? That like,
oh, yeah.
The liminal space between the jump and the landing was so really messy.
Oh, yeah. So there was this time, it was funny, like years ago, I went skydiving and I did a tandem jump and was, you know, attached to the tandem master. And I was all set and ready. And like, we did our somersault flip out of the airplane. And I remember like reaching back, trying to grab the airplane and trying to grab the clouds to like hold on to. Cause I was like, wait, I'm not ready. And I was like, wait. And then I was like, I am grabbing at literally nothing. I have no choice but to continue falling here. Like, it was this, like, I have no choice. And that was, it's funny that you say this liminal space, Danica, because it was like, that was exactly how I felt. It was like, okay, I'm just going to fall now. And okay.
Because you can decide. Yeah, okay, I'll fall.
Yeah, yeah. Like, what other choice do I have? So there was, it was really messy because before I had like, okay, landed and was like, okay, so now I have a plan moving forward. I've created my list of things I'm going to do. And I have my homework every week and whatever. There was this place that I was just like, well, now what do I do? And it was really unsettling. It was when that braid of identity, purpose, and spirituality was totally unraveling. And then I was like, okay, I know that I want to do something about my sister, but like, damn it. She like traumatized our family for so long. Like, why would I even do this? And then the other part of me was like, because you can, because it's what's needed in the world, because it's about healing, because it's about hope. And I was like, I don't wanna, like, she doesn't get to still be the boss of me. But then it was like, oh, but this might be a spiritual nudge that's telling me that I have the resources and the gifts and the abilities and the connections to continue to do this and to change my family story. Yeah. So, so you're absolutely right, Danica. It was not comfortable. It was not pleasurable. There were many nights that I was just, you know, crazy. And I got to give a shout out to my husband, who was just a rock through the whole thing. And it let me be crazy when I was crazy. And every now and then when I let him have a voice in my ranting, you know, he would occasionally have, well, he would often have something really fabulous to say. And then I'd be mad at him for, you know, being rational. But, you know, he's been absolutely fantastic and supporting this whole thing because I was a hot mess, and I wouldn't say that I'm not still a hot mess on occasion. So
I think there's something in that to offer that, like, it's not always clean. Like, you knew it was the right thing and you knew that it was time and you knew all of those things, but it didn't take away the messy middle, and it didn't take away the like second guessing, like, am I doing this out of guilt? And am I doing this trying to prove something to Annie or for Annie? Or, I mean, there was a lot of messy questions. And so I just I just want to name that anybody who's asking these questions of, you know, where do I go from here?
Right. So funny story. I had been, like I said, it was really difficult with my sister while she was alive. And so I was in therapy like every 2 weeks. I was going in and, you know, decompressing and, like, you know, putting on all of my work. And then she died. And so I went, my therapy session was like just a few days later. And I remember I walked into my therapist's office and was like, so Annie died. So I guess we're done with that conversation now. And I like changed the subject to talk about the next thing. And I was like, all done. And the therapist was like, no. Stop. Like, no. Unpack that.
You know what? We're gonna dig into that one. We're gonna dig into that.
Right. I was like, I thought I'd check that off my list of things to worry about because she can't terrorize me anymore. So all done. Mm. It was like, no, we're just getting started here.
Yeah.
We're just gonna get started. And that's the blessing of the accountability buddy, be it a therapist, a friend, a coach, spiritual director, whoever worked for you, to hold you and to sit with you in the middle of all of that and recognize that you are still okay and you can be in the middle of all of that and you can still breathe and you can still take the next step and then you can still do and pay attention to what's the next right nudge for what you should do.
Yeah, the knowing and the unknowing at the same time, it seems to be a lot of what's behind this like really deep longing at this question, right? That you can, there's so much that we do know, but then at the same time, that unknown beyond it, we can know to the point where we don't know anymore. And then, and then it's like the emptiness or the space that's carved out from whatever change is happening or whatever's going on. It's a weird spot to know so much and very purposely and very, mindfully, you knew like what the step was that you needed to take. But then once the step is taken, there's this new kind of unknowing that creates this question of where to go from here. And I think it's also important to make the distinction, I think, here too, that like for you, this was a vocational change, but the question of where we go from here is so deeply personal. It's not just tied up in one part of our lives. You know, and all of us are dealing with different things that are eliciting the same question and the same feelings in different ways. I mean, I really appreciated, Kristen, the way that you began this conversation by saying, I had the privilege to make this decision on my own while others are in the same spot I was, having not made the decision on their own. And so we can be experiencing these really similar things and the same feeling in so many different ways. And still it's the same longing after where do we go from here? And so it's messy. It's messy.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
I'm wondering if we could finish with one more question. Mm-hmm. What do you think? And this is big. This is a big question, but do your best.
good luck.
What do you think, or based on your experience with wrestling with this question, what do you think is the most important thing for us in this moment or in the days ahead as church workers? Sure. But I'm kind of more interested in like as humans, what have you discovered that you could share with us that might be one of the most important things for us in this moment?
Without sounding trite, self-care, but not self-care in like, I'm going to take a bubble bath 3 times a week, or I'm going to get a massage once a month, but like self-care as lifestyle, as knowing that you are enough, as from the very sense of your identity and your purpose and your spirituality, that you are divinely created. Therefore, you need to take care of the divine within you, and that it's not just a to-do list self-care task thing, but like caring about yourself enough that you're knowing, a deep knowing that your story matters, and whatever it takes to get you there that helps you know that your story matters, do those things. And whatever it is that, you know, if you need literally to take the time for like reflection and take some time out of the busyness, like a nap isn't just a self-care thing, it's a Sabbath thing. And I was just talking to a friend of mine earlier today about like, you know, the good old story of like, even Jesus took naps and he was the savior of the world. So you could probably take a nap too, you know? So it's self-care, but self-care from a level of recognizing your own value and who you are as a child of God. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It's good.
I love that.
Yeah, because the beautiful thing about that is when you discover the necessity for taking care of yourself, you might create beautiful things that help other people. And you know, Kristen, that's where it seems you found yourself, is this, the things that you've discovered about who you are and where you're going, and in your taking care of yourself and the things that were within you, just like beautiful people are gonna benefit from the work that you're doing. And I just, that's what it's all about. That's cool.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for the conversation. It's helpful for me too, to like remember and to be able to put some words on some things for myself. So I appreciate all the conversations that we've had along the way. And I mean that from like all 27 years of ministry in this church with this network with people. Like, it has been no small thing.
Oh, we've also been recipients of your gifts. So we're grateful for that as well.
Thank you.
Legend. She's a legend. Legend. As we were having this conversation, it felt important to the 3TC team that there was some piece that was grounding as we're all grasping at nothing, as Kristen said. I think the saying something out loud helps normalize the crazy that we're all feeling and this question that we're all asking in. Maybe some people are lucky enough to be asking it in one area of their life, but I would venture to guess that most of us are asking, where do we go from here in lots of areas of our lives? And so our own liturgist in residence, Elizabeth, has written a closing blessing that we'll use over the next three episodes. So I invite you to take a deep breath and hear God's grace.
Friends out there, hear these words. When your back is against the wall, when the walls are closing in, when the very last straw has been drawn, when you ask, where do I go from here? Know that you are not alone. The weight of the world is not only yours to carry. For we believe in Christ who strengthens us. We believe in God who works for good in all circumstances. So may you, beloved child of God, may you find peace. May you rest in the promise of grace. May you take a deep breath, unclench your fists, and know that wherever you go from here, God goes with you. Amen.
Amen. Before we go, there are a quick few announcements and reminders we've got for you. Registration for Extravaganza 2021 opened yesterday. The event will be February 4th through 6th and will be a hybrid event. Up to 100 people will be able to gather, as of right now, in the Minneapolis Hilton from February 4th to 6th, as I said. The online parts will be February 5th and 6th, and the theme will be Holding Loosely. You can find more information, including getting registered for either option, at ext21.org. Thanks to all of you who are members of the network. Your membership makes things like Third Tuesday Conversation and Connect Journal, discipling cohorts, and the extravaganza possible. If you're not a member of the network, we encourage you to join. If you are, then we'll check to make sure your membership is up to date. Do so by logging into the website and clicking on your name at the top to see your account status. We're grateful to be a community that cares for this ministry. Thanks so much for listening. New podcasts will be released on the third Tuesday of every month. Be sure to subscribe so you receive them as they come out and share them with your friends. Thanks to Paul Amlin, the 3TC producer, for his work. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye-bye.